everyone. Welcome back for the final couples series episode, appropriately named Divorce. We've had a breakup episode in the past, but divorce is its own beast. I mean, there's financial concerns, lawyers, kids involved in many cases. And so it can take on a whole different tone than a breakup, and it can have more ramifications. So we wanted to make sure that we had an episode dedicated to that. And we have, as always, Dr. Kibby McMahon with us today. But the difference is that she will be acting less of therapy expert and more of a storyteller for her own very recent and painful experience with divorce. So she'll be telling her story here, and I'll weave in also some elements from my sister's divorce, which was the messiest I've ever seen, because she went through a divorce with kids involved. And so this is, again, kind of a personal episode. We have many of these, but we will bring in our research, tips, and tricks as well. So, Kibby, you've been going through it these past few months. Can you kind of describe a little bit of the emotional experience?
Yeah, this was one of my worst nightmares, I guess. It was like, this is going to be... It's gonna be rough to explain all this. I grew up as a child of divorce. I was single, an only child, and my parents divorced when I was six. And I could talk about that too, but that was just something that was so defining for my childhood. It's just dominated everything. Their fights, the battles over custody, going back and forth to their houses, like watching my mom kind of go into her own depression hole with following the divorce for years. So, I mean, this was just something that I always was afraid of. And I could never have predicted, like, I tried to do everything I could to avoid divorce, like marrying someone who I knew for a long time. I just tried everything I could to avoid it, and here I am. And I just didn't really expect things to turn out the way they did. You know, like, I'm 35 and feel so young, and you know, all my friends are having their kids or second kids, and so part of that is like, kind of surprise. I kind of like, well, wow, I'm just kind of falling into some of my childhood patterns that I've been running away from, like we often do.
I didn't know that was on your mind. I didn't know that was part of this.
Yeah. I mean, it stung particularly because I think it was a big part of my identity that I fought, because in especially my mom's background, she's from Hong Kong, and so the Chinese background, they really don't, they do everything they can to avoid divorce. Like, in fact, that's like the worst thing, and they don't often do it. And when my mom got divorced, it was a big deal. Like, it was a really big deal. She got, her parents took her money away from her. There was a lot of shame involved. They kind of saw me as a problem child because I was a child of divorce. So, my cousins at some point were told not to hang out with me anymore.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it was really like, and you know, as much as my family loves me, they still, I think there was still this underlying messages of like, we thought you would turn out worse because you're a child of divorce, but you didn't turn out as bad as we thought. So this is kind of like underlying shame. And then here I am in it. So I think it was just something that I was constantly trying to run away from or overcome, and then here I am here. So there's that piece.
Well, what strikes me about that too is that one of the biggest pieces of advice or important things to remember when you were getting divorced and you have kids is to not make them feel like it's their fault. And here you are, a kid, it's obviously not your fault, but your relatives are ostracizing you.
I mean, there's different cultural, components to it too, right? It's a lot more common here. What is it, like 60%? I don't know if the latest stats was like 60% of marriages end in divorce here.
Yeah, probably, I mean, at least 50.
Yeah. So, yeah, you just, you know, especially as an only child, you can't help but feel responsible or feel like you're like the only witness or the only, you know, person experiencing kind of the schism in your whole foundation of life as a kid. So, yeah, it had a big mark on me. And, right now, I could talk about the, you know, how this all happened, this whole relationship, but I'm in the final stages. So we are signing, hopefully soon is signing the, divorce agreement, and then we'll file with the courts and the judgment will come back. It'll be finalized in like, you know, 6 to 8 months or something. That's what I'm told. So putting the final pen strokes on the whole thing, but it's been about a year long extravaganza.
Yeah.
And I think you're asking about how I feel emotionally now. I have so many, it kind of is crazy making because there's so many things in my life that I'm very, very lucky, feel very, you know, lucky to have. And I have a bright future ahead of me that I'm really excited about. But, in it, like, as we're going through the final stretch, I'm just, you know, the resentment and rage and injustice and everything. Like, I'm kind of, some days I kind of ruminate over the anger.
One of the things that convinced me that we should do a divorce episode is that when you first separated, it was at least partially amicable. I mean, I don't remember a ton of rage back when the actual breakup. And it's been the divorce that has really, like, destroyed any threads of, like, friendship or goodwill towards each other.
Yeah, part of that is looking back on the relationship and kind of seeing it for the whole picture. Mm-hmm. And all the resentment that I've kind of bottled up is now in the forefront. And it's also, the reason why I feel so different than a breakup, first of all, it's, there's this public promise of this being forever, right? We had a wedding, you stand up in front of all your friends and family, you talk about vows and, you know, things that you'll do forever. And then when you get married, when I got married, it really shifted my view of the relationship from just like a, you know, being together to like, this is my family member. Mm-hmm. And then in the divorce, you are splitting that up in this really quantifiable way. You're like literally splitting assets, right? Like, how much money does each person get? And like, how, like, what does that person deserve? Mm-hmm. And so all these kind of emotional pieces are like, you know, you put price tags on them. So it just becomes like it, and you're losing like a family member, someone you thought that you were going to build a family with, or someone you thought would be there forever. And they're not anymore. So it feels very different for me than any other breakup I've had in serious relationships.
Okay, so why don't you tell us about the relationship trajectory?
Yeah, so I met my husband, ex-husband? I don't know at this point. I don't know. I met my ex-husband in my study abroad program in Italy in junior year of college. And I had such a crush on him. I was like madly in love, very charming, social man. I'm very, you know, we had a group of friends and everything like that. And we all kind of liked him. It was very flirtatious. And we started dating when we came back to our colleges for our senior year. And we started dating long distance. And even back then, it was pretty painful because I had idealized him so much. In my head, I kept ruminating over how he was like the perfect guy for me, but he just didn't want me. We were dating, but weren't exclusive. I don't think we were dating other people, but he was holding back. He kept saying he didn't want to get attached because he knew he didn't want to move to where I was going to move. So we knew that it was kind of like an end date after graduation. But for that whole year, I was like madly in love, obsessed with this guy. We were dating and hooking up and everything like that, but he wasn't calling me his girlfriend. And that was just so painful. And I think the part that makes me so angry about the whole thing now is that how much I blame, I thought I wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. You know, like, back then, I was like, if only if I was a certain type of woman, he would actually want to be with me and move with me and stay with me after graduation. Or, yeah, so I just, or if I worked harder, if I was, like, the perfect, so I really put it on myself of, like, why am I not good enough? Like, I kept ruminating to my friends, why am I not good enough? Why doesn't he like me? Yeah, so that was the beginning. And then we broke up pretty, in an ugly way, in the summer after we graduated. And we didn't speak for, well, we talked here and there, but we didn't see each other for the next several years. It's like 7 years or something like that since mm-hmm. between the times that we, and he wanted to get back together at that point, but I was just too heartbroken. So it was just kind of this messy breakup. And I hadn't seen him for those many years, and we went to a mutual friend's wedding, and we saw each other, and I mean, sparks flew right away. Like, I definitely felt it. I definitely was like, whoa, all the feelings were coming back. And he was like the one guy in my mind, like the one that got away kind of thing. The one that I was like mm-hmm. that into, that it didn't work out. You know, it was just, so I just had this, this like fantasy in my mind, but I wasn't sure if it was just like infatuation or something about college or whatever. But as soon as we saw each other, I felt it again. And shortly, I was in a relationship at the time, but he shortly after that admitted he still had feelings for me. And then when I broke up with the relationship I was in, we got together almost right away. And I was really scared. I was, you know, given our history, I didn't know what it would be like. It was such a bad breakup and such a painful relationship. I just wasn't sure. I was very scared. But he insisted, and I said to him, I was like, I really want this to be an equal relationship. I want kids. I want a family soon. I want marriage. At the time I was like 30. I was 30 years old. So I was like, I want this soon. And if you're not into that, we can't work. So, and he said, no, but you know, I want to come and move there. Live with you and make this work. He was finishing his, residency at the time in Florida. Mm-hmm. But I said, you know, it's just really important to me that you, you know, get a job here, like make your own life. If you're going to move here with me, then, you know, let's make this an equal life and not just, you know, you coming and moving here with me.
It's a bit of foreshadowing, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much to share just because I don't want to trash talk anybody. Like, there's two sides to every story. So I know that this is just my perspective, and it was painful for both parties, and I'm trying to stay as factual as possible. You know, I'm trying. This is one of the hard parts about divorce, right? It's like mm-hmm. I have such anger that I can really go into all the different things that made me angry, but then again, that's really like narrows my mind on like mm-hmm. the one or two stories that like, you know, really get me. I'll tell some details, but he came here and just, you know, said that he would get a job, and, you know, he was burnt out from medicine and didn't want to work in medicine anymore, but didn't know what to do next. So he's really depressed and lost. And, that started basically like a 4-year relationship, but two of the later years we got married. So we're together for two and married for two, living together for two. But he really struggled with getting a job, and my mind always hooked on that being the problem, like mm-hmm. him not getting a job. But when I look back, it really wasn't just that. Even putting together the college years, it was really that we would talk about things that I would need from the relationship and he'd agree and then not live up to them.
Yeah.
So even if it was like get a job or something simple as like get me the guest list for the wedding, or I don't know, like volunteer in the community or take out the trash regularly, or just something that we would set as our agreement about what he would contribute and what I would contribute. I just constantly found that he wouldn't follow through unless I reminded him a lot or begged or yelled or anything. And he just he always just did less than what we agreed to. And so eventually I felt gaslit. Like I eventually, you know, he would say like, oh, I'm, you know, I definitely want a job. I definitely want to work hard. I want to do this with you. But then whenever it came to him making decision of like, you know, doing the steps to get there, he wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And I never, to this day, I have no idea why. Sometimes I wonder if it was on purpose. Sometimes I wonder if it was like absentmindedness. Sometimes I wonder if it was like straight up taking advantage of me.
Yeah.
Honestly. So
I mean, this just reminds me of like a big thing we've talked about throughout these episodes also, is that when there's a mental health component, it's really hard to know, is this avoidance from depression or ADHD or whatever?
Yeah.
Then if it is, do I need to be extra patient and sacrifice myself for years? Or do I just at some point say, I don't care. Ultimately, my needs are not being met. And yeah. I can keep questioning this and excavating, but like, it doesn't change the final verdict.
Yeah. I mean, all the topics that we cover in this podcast, it just like, I was living it. It's this, when you're with someone who says they have symptoms of mental health, they're struggling. With him, it was burnout and kind of anxiety over the future and things like that. Yeah, like, I didn't know how much of it was my fault. Like, my tendency is to feel guilty over things. So I was like, oh, this is my fault. If I did something differently, if I was someone different, he would try harder. And then it was, I had no idea how much I should just, like, kind of support him through it, you know, keep getting the groceries, keep paying the bills, and how much I should then impose like limits or boundaries. Like, you must pay half the bills or you're out, you know, like, mm-hmm. And it's so hard when you're in that position of like caring for someone and like living with someone and you feel this sympathy for them and what they're going through, but then also you're not getting what you need. So it just, it's not easy.
I remember having so many conversations with you about this quandary, basically, of like, why won't he give me what I need? Why won't he get a job? Like, what do I do about this? I feel like I'm being taken advantage of. But you still lived with this, and then all of a sudden it was a very kind of quick transition from, I'm done. Can mm-hmm. you tell us about that?
I think it definitely didn't feel okay. Well, you know, I felt like a buildup that just snapped in one. So I would go back and forth between, it was a lot of denial, honestly. Like, it was like being really concerned about the situation, and not really sure, like, is this whenever you have a marriage or a relationship, you never know what's just a rough patch that mm-hmm. you could get through together and what's something that you're going to deal with forever. So mm-hmm. there was a level that I said, okay, it's been 4 years. He's still struggling in this way. We still have the same dynamic. And then the dynamic was awful. Like, I felt like a nag. Like, I felt like this demanding partner, and then I constantly did not know if I was being reasonable or asking for too much. You know, I'm like obsessive about work and things like that. So was I just imposing that value or that desire on him, or was it reasonable to ask him to contribute in that way? Like, you know, mm-hmm. I constantly doubted myself. So it was this kind of constant rumination in the back of my mind. Like, but I knew if I said something, you know, and if I actually like prodded him on it, he would get like more anxious and ashamed. And so I made it worse. And so I would have to kind of pretend nothing was wrong, and we would be fine for a couple weeks, couple months. And then I would snap and say like, what's going on here? Like, I don't even know what you're doing with your day. I don't know what's going on with us. And I would flip into anger. And I admit I did say things that were mean. I said, you're not the man that you think you are, that I married, that I wanted to marry, you know, like there were times I really, you know, leaned into the anger. And then he would say, oh, no, you're right. Like, let's make this work. I'll get better. This has been hard. And so I would be placated and going, mm-hmm. and I would flip into guilt. Like, how could I say this mean thing to him? He's struggling, blah, blah, blah. So it would go in waves like that for a while. And I think it was when we went to New York for my internship that things changed, because I was really busy with internship. Also going through IVF, right? I'd wake up at 6, go to the doctor's, get my blood drawn, an ultrasound, you know, get all these meds that are expensive. I'd come home, I'd walk the dogs, and then I'd start my day at 9 and then work until 6. And then like walk the dogs again and get us dinner. And it was just the contrast of watching him not do as much as I was doing. And that was always just kind of like laying the seeds in the back of my mind. And we had a good IVF cycle, and we're about to put in that embryo, and I panicked. I just had this intense gut feeling of, I can't do this. I really just can't do this. Mm-hmm. And I said that to him. I said, I don't think we could do this. We're not in a place in our marriage to be able to have a kid. And I think the problem with the thing I don't know, say it did wrong, but when you get into a serious relationship and you're in your 30s or late 20s, you're in that marrying age, and you find someone, the whole wedding and family planning can take over and cover a lot of holes in the relationship, because it's something that you're working towards. It's exciting. Everyone's getting excited for you.
Yeah.
You know, you're excited to kind of get through that milestone. It's sometimes like this cap of, you know, success or whatever, that your life is going well. And then right after the wedding, you know, you're kind of left with the reality of the marriage. And so I was so caught up in the wanting a kid that the moment where I was about to have one, I was like, I can't do this. Yeah. I can't do this to my kid. I can't raise a kid in a unhappy marriage. Like that kid, as much as both of us would be good parents, I just knew that we wouldn't be good parents together.
Yeah. The kid aspect is so crucial. I mean, and for you, it was like the reason why you had to make this decision to get out. Like, yeah. I can't do this for the kids. With my sister, with my sister, it was like she had two kids, and so she fought for the marriage, like, mm-hmm. endlessly until it was just so clear that it was toxic. I mean, she put up with, you know, her husband having an affair with a nurse at the hospital where they both worked.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And her being the last to find out, years of, you know, neglect and emotional abuse, and just deciding to, like, keep fighting for it. They had actually never been legally married, but they lived together as if they were married and had kids together. And then they got for real married after this affair to like solidify things. And it wasn't until he kept cheating with that same woman. He reported her to the medical boards for alcohol. He had his mistress report her for harassment, for just trying to have a civil conversation. She found out that her engagement ring of 15 years was cubic zirconium, even though they were both anesthesiologists. Just, you know, lie after lie after lie uncovered, and just fighting for it in spite of all this because of the kids. And so I'm so glad you got out before that mess.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so hard to be a mother or a father, and probably like your entire social circle is pushing you to get out. Well, maybe 50% are pushing you to get out. The other 50% are saying you're insane. You have to stay in for the kids. And you're just so torn between unhappiness and responsibility.
Yeah.
It's just such a brutal choice.
The kids thing is a big piece. And I think that if, you know, I started out by the story by talking about how I'm kind of back in my worst nightmare. But actually, if I give myself a little bit more credit,
I avoided it.
Yeah, broke. I think that's the thing with you know, growing and psychotherapy. It's like we do have the same patterns, and we make the same mistakes or make the mistakes of our parents or whatever. So there is this kind of like, you know, we're kind of in this spiral of doing the same thing over and over. But if we can make a little change in it, like a little, if we move the needle just like a little bit over, I think that's growth. That's like the realistic amount of success that we can, we're not going to be a completely different or do very different things, but we can maybe move the needle a little bit. So yes, I'm getting a divorce, but I didn't want a kid to grow up the way I did.
I mean, I think you moved the needle in the most crucial way. Like mm-hmm. you avoided what was the real meat of the issue.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope so. Yeah. I know that a kid feels the pain and tension of their parents. Like the parents are this foundation, right? Mm-hmm. And I think parents think that they're doing a good job of hiding whatever problems they have from the kids, but kids feel it. They really pick up on these things very, very quickly. And even if I stayed in the marriage, I think that my resentment about the broken promises would have come through and either, you know, just affected the way we parented, or that would have been the blueprint, right? We talked about this, like the blueprint of how our kids would have gone through life. You know, they would have think that resentment is normal in a marriage. And I couldn't stomach that. And so, yeah, that's when I had the gut reaction of I got to get out. It wasn't for me. It was for my future kids.
Was it hard for you leaving such an epic love story? I mean, that spanned almost a decade and that involved so much idealization and fairy tale. Like, did that ever play in, or were you kind of over that by the time you left?
It is a bit more of the social part, because I think I have amazing friends who love me a lot, and they're a bunch of, you know, incredible people. But I am sensitive whenever. I am sensitive to the fact that most of my really close friends have been in like a solid relationship since their early 20s and mm-hmm. married and had kids, and you know, that's it. And I dated a lot, had a lot of different boyfriends. You know, I kind of identify as like avoidant attachment. Like I was the one, you know, all that stuff. Like I was the one, one who was like always not sure about committing. Right. Yeah, and so like, and so, you know, and probably it was just holding on to this, I'm a problem child of divorce, identity. Mm-hmm. And I think that the love story was just convinced me, and I think everyone else, that this is the real deal. This is the one, you know, trying to find the one, and I found it. And then for that to go so horribly wrong, I felt a lot of shame and a lot of like, everyone's going to look at me and say like, oh, we knew it, or, you know, this is exactly what they thought of me. And so I just, that part is the hard part of losing that like epic love story.
Yeah. I always remember hearing people divorcing, saying that they felt like failures, that they had failed, that they felt shame. And from my vantage point of a perpetually a single yet casual dater, I was like, that never made any sense to me. And now I'm getting it. I mean, it does, mm-hmm. a relationship does feel like a massive undertaking that has taken a ton of work and compromise and change. I mean, sort of public proclamation.
Yeah.
So is that what you're coping with, or where does the shame come in?
Yeah, I do think that the shame comes in with, I think maybe our society does this, but there's just so much emphasis on the marriage and weddings and having kids as a sign of success, especially sadly for women, you know, like a lot of us, as career driven as we can be, there's just this piece where your family's always going to ask you like, oh, are you getting married soon and going to have kids? And, you know, since I was like, you know, I got there. And then to, you know, let it go. And being so terrified of being a woman in my 30s with fertility issues. I don't know if I have fertility issues, but we had trouble conceiving. So it was just terrifying to then let go of the social marker, the public marker of your life is going okay, you're an okay mm-hmm. person, right? So And then, yeah, there's a, you know, I, when things don't go well, I always blame myself. I always blame that I'm not good enough, that I don't have what it takes. I didn't do enough. I'm a broken person. So I really put that on the relationship for a long time. And now that I'm coming out of it, I see that that's not true. I see that it was a bad fit between his values and my values. And how we go about challenges. Like, I dig in and I work and work and work and work, maybe too much. But I'm a big proponent of like digging in and doing the thing. And, he tended to avoid, situations that were difficult. And there was also a lot of deception. There was a lot of, since I think, you know, especially this is a problem with when one person or both people tend to avoid problems, it really splits the reality into two different things, right? You have whatever's on the surface, and then you have things that you're avoiding, things that you're hiding. And it doesn't have like there, we didn't cheat on each other, but it felt like that. It felt like I didn't know what there was these parts of him that were hidden from my view that I couldn't make sense of, you know? And, I didn't know if they were like intentionally obscured or.
Yeah. Can you give us an example?
For example, like when he first moved here, I know that he was ambivalent about becoming a doctor. So he said he applied for his licensure here in North Carolina. And then he was like, not sure if he actually wanted to get a job, but you know, he mentioned that the licensure would take a long process and I didn't hear about it for a while. And then I would ask him periodically, like, how's the application going? Like, did they approve it? Was there an issue? And he was like, I don't know. And I think they need another document, but I don't know. I should check on that soon. And that was going on for a couple years. And then finally, like 2 years into the marriage, right when I was about to, when I was having my doubts, I looked at them in the eye and I said, did you actually apply? And he said, no, I never did. So he didn't cheat on me with a woman, but that felt like I lived in a different reality to him. There was another one where, there's an example of, how the, you know, we always had money issues, right? And I was unclear what he was doing for money or thinking what he was thinking about, in terms of how we're going to deal our finances or whatever. And also this is an important thing. When you're dating, at least when I dated people, I didn't really focus so much on how someone actually approaches money or work or things like that, right? Because when you're dating and not living together, those like shared bills and stuff like that doesn't necessarily become important. But then when you're married, you're really like splitting, you're really like a partnership, you know, in this life together. So finances become a little bit more, and like people's values about money and what to spend it on and how much, you know, what to save. And, you know, people see money differently. And I remember I had to look for my passport for something, and then I opened a drawer that was full of crumpled up lottery tickets.
No.
Hundreds and hundreds of crumpled up lottery tickets.
Oh my god, I had no idea.
Yeah. And yeah, at first I was like, oh, that's strange. But then when I really thought about it, I got this creepy feeling. It was kind of this feeling that I came across like text message from another girl, or like found a porn stash or a drug stash. I was like, what is this? Like hundreds of crumpled up lottery tickets. And I asked him about it, and he was like, oh, it's just something I do. You know, it's no big deal.
So how did this go from, okay, we're breaking up, you know, I remember your breakup was just really, I mean, really sad. You know, you held each other for a long time. I mean, you had kind of a night where, well, I guess you can describe it, but it went from at least like being together in the breakup to a ton of anger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my divorce lawyers said that happens so often. Like, I was warned about that. And I was like, no, we're amicable. We care about each other and have respect. And, And it was, you know, it was very sad. It was, I was the one who wanted it. He didn't. But I felt a lot of love and I was hoping for the best for him and vice versa, I think. And then it really got down to the divorce proceedings. Like I'll say that I recommend a prenup, a prenuptial agreement uh-huh. for anyone who's even considering it, because not just about, it's not just about, you know, making sure one person doesn't take all the money. There's a lot of pieces in a prenuptial agreement that's just like, very important to kind of iron out before you marry. I see it as making an agreement, at a time when you two are happy and cooperative and respect each other and are in a good place, and making those decisions about how you would possibly end mm-hmm. is useful. And there's also pieces about, you know, like what would happen with kids and property if you die, right? There's a, so it's not just a document about like a breakup. It's also, you know, important. So just consider it if you are considering it. But when it started to go sour was, at least for me, was when we were going back and forth on, even with a prenup, negotiating how much I give him, like how much money yeah. he gets from me. And I just, that was the ultimate betrayal, because I always was afraid that he was taking advantage or with me for the money, or, you know, mm-hmm. if we divorced, he'd go for a lot of money. And he insisted while we were together that he would not take any money. Yeah. And insisted that it wasn't, he, you know, what we were together for. And then I just, all the different decisions along the way would suggest otherwise, that he was kind of definitely taking as much money as he could.
I mean, it proves otherwise. Yeah.
And my lawyers were kind of saying like, yeah, this is the way it goes. You know, like mm-hmm. people make all these kind of promises when they're together, but when people do divorce, they really start to think about themselves. Mm-hmm. They're not thinking about you and the problems they made, the promises they made to you and your well-being. They're looking out for themselves and what they think they deserve.
Yeah.
And it my lawyers were like, it's unreasonable to think that he would not, that anyone would not try to go for as much as they could in that uh-huh. circumstance. So that's painful to see. You know, you have so much pain and resentment, and you're hoping that the good times and connections you had would kind of carry over into those moments, but they really don't.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you go from being family to just taking from each other.
Yeah. Like a adversary, or like trying to quantify what you contributed to the relationship and mm-hmm. what you think you deserve, like independently. Right? Yeah. Like, what piece of the pie is mine from our yeah. shared life? So all the times that you know, might fight over, like, who's doing the dishes or who, you know, whatever, it comes out in that final moment.
Yeah. I think with my sister's divorce, they are both very wealthy. I mean, they're both doctors. And he, I think, knew for years that he was going to leave and started squirreling away money. So she lost a ton of money in the divorce as well. And that's just, it's already so scary to start a new life and be single, but to know that you've been financially crippled as well just is such an added burden. And to know that you've been betrayed. I mean, in your situation, it's still a betrayal, even if it's reasonable, as your lawyers say. I mean, I can understand also why he would say, well, you know, fuck her, she left me, like, mm-hmm. why would I care about her financial well-being and just take the money and run? But at the same time, from your perspective, it's like, well, this goes against every promise you ever made.
Right. It's like, yeah. If I supported him through, you know, financially during different times, wouldn't he, you know, not keep going and taking that from me after? Or even, and you know, I think this is the part that's so hard with divorce, particularly. You create a life together, a home, a house, I don't know, companies, like other things together as a married couple, and you love those things. And then in the divorce, you have to split them. Mm-hmm. So at least, like, I don't have a child, but like, even just feeling, you know, even just like talking about how much of the share of my house he has feels very personal, right? It doesn't feel like just dollar signs. It's like, this this is my house. And then he also probably felt ownership and love for this house. So it's just like, you're taking pieces that you loved and grew yeah. together and like splitting it up. And it just is very, it feels ickier than any breakup I've had.
So real quick, can you take us back to the moment when you had to look at your husband and tell him you were leaving him? I mean, that must have been horrible.
Yeah, I think it was in stages, I think. It was all awful. But saying that I couldn't go through the IVF was like step one. And that was mm-hmm. really tough because I basically was saying goodbye to this dream child. So it was saying goodbye to this whole family and life. And then at the time though, I wanted to take time to think about it. So I wasn't sure if that was the end. But then I just had like surges of emotion, like surges of like anger, all the times that I've felt angry at him and didn't say anything in the moment because I didn't want to upset him, just like flooded me. Mm-hmm. And for a whole week straight, and this is a place that, you know, friends and family can really help. Like my friend Caitlin, you know, our friend Caitlin, she was with me for that week, and I was just like word vomiting stories, and it was just coming out of me in like waves of, and then this happened, and then this happened, and that's not fair. And just letting that wave come and then shift and then kind of settle into a decision. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it kind of felt like, I mean, I always talk about it this way, like pulling back a curtain. Like yeah. I kept trying to put the curtain, like try to cover up the problems, but then it was like someone ripped away the curtain and mm-hmm. I saw all the problems in their entirety and I could not go back. And... Yeah. All the things that I couldn't put the curtain back. I couldn't go back into my phase of denial where things were like, okay. As much as I wanted to, there were parts of me that was just like, oh God, it would be so much easier to like get back and, you know, together and get that embryo in me and just like move forward and go to couples therapy. But I just knew that I had this gut feeling of disgust in myself, and I viscerally couldn't, like, I didn't feel like I could. And so when I went to talk to him, I mean, it was heartbreaking because it just, I had come to a place of decision, making a decision, but then I saw and felt what I was losing when I said goodbye to him in person. Like, it just was, there was so many parts of us that felt good and felt normal and right. And then I was saying goodbye to them, and that was just, I was just sad. It was just incredibly sad. I over my life, I know that even when, if something is super sad, it still can be right. So luckily I kept that in mind, that even though I was like devastated, this is the right way. So I didn't waver as much as I thought I might have, but.
Yeah. I mean, this strikes me as an example where anger is a protective emotion. Mm-hmm. I mean, it gave you some finality, mm-hmm. maybe, I mean, or perhaps like prevented you from feeling too much guilt, doubt, wavering, because pulling that curtain back, I mean, it just sounds like it was just and like waterfall of just like venting and feeling mm-hmm. and resentment and all came out. And then it at least like made the decision more of a resounding, I got it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember, I think I've like coped with it by talking to friends, of course. And, mm-hmm. but, watching different TV shows and movies that kind of I resonate with, like one I watched at the time called The Marriage Story. Yeah. It's with Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson. And I think that they did a really good job showing what divorce is really like, or there wasn't a huge problem. It wasn't like someone did something terrible. It was like two people who just drifted apart and started to have different wants for their lives. And, just in, you know, there were parts of their characters that like matched well.
Yeah.
But then those pieces were, you know, like eventually led to their demise. And there's just one scene with Adam Driver and her and Scarlett Johansson, like the married couple. And he is just screaming, like, I hate you, I hate you. And he collapses on the floor and is, like, sobbing. And she comes over and pets his head. And I just love that scene because the amount of anger, like, mm-hmm. the special kind of hatred that comes out, I've never felt before. It's like a despair. It's a deep despair.
Yeah. It's like you can only be that angry if you've loved them first. You can only uh-huh. hate that yep. much if you have a further drop mm-hmm. to go.
Yep.
Yeah, that movie really pointed... I mean, that put the fear of God in me about divorce. because again, it's like if they didn't have to go through the divorce proceedings, it would have been so... Like the divorce would have, the breakup would have been so much more peaceful.
Yeah, getting lawyers involved, then suddenly a marriage of two people and a breakup of two people, you have lawyers. You have, mm-hmm. like, people who take on your emotional energy and try to make it a practical consideration. Like,
yeah, what's a relationship like with a divorce lawyer?
So, basically, I don't know about other divorces, but basically just our lawyers now fight it out, right? And so, we don't speak, but our lawyers kind of are battling over these different pieces. Mm-hmm. So, it's this funny thing, because I have urges to, like, tell my lawyers the emotion, like, I almost, like, express my anger through them.
Yeah.
But it's their job to kind of take that out of it, to take mm-hmm. the anger and emotions out of it and make this a really practical, like, let's seal the deal and get this, you know... on paper kind of thing. So, but it's funny that I have even fantasies of like telling his lawyer what he's really uh-huh. like, you know, it's just things of like, you know, it's like you have these like professional mediators and something that was so private just between you and this other person becomes like more public, right? Like you have people on your side and like all of our friends and family are hearing one side of the story. So it just amplifies it in a way that's so strange, and it can't be a matter of just like, well, just get over it and move on. You're even a year after we broke up, I'm still on emails about how much money he's yeah. getting for my house. You know, just
yeah,
ugh, I can't. Every time I get an email from a lawyer, I get upset. It ruins and when my it, day.
I mean, with kids are involved, I mean, my sister has been going through this divorce and these proceedings for years, and there's still not a custody agreement. And part of it's because of her alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every recovery, like she's by and large recovered, but if there's a relapse, it like sets back the timer and there's new proceedings. And, you know, there is research showing that divorce increases the rates of depression, anxiety, and alcoholism or alcohol abuse, even yeah. once there's a new marriage. So, yeah. I mean, this all started prior to the divorce, but it does have ramifications, and no kidding, when you might be fighting over how often you can see your kids or how financially stable you're going to be or how much you have to keep giving to somebody who has hurt you.
Yeah.
You know, for so long, it's just such an awful experience.
Yeah. Divorce, you know, especially if anyone listening who's getting a divorce with children, like, my heart goes out to you. It's hard to not feel so much guilt and so much fear about how this would affect your kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, what I would say, you know, is try your best to get on the same page with that partner, even if you need a mediator. Like, yeah. I think that people can hire mediators, but like, whatever personal gripes you have with the other, with your ex, whatever, husband or wife, get on the same page in terms of being a parent, like a co-parent team for your kid, and show respect for each other in front of the kid and don't make the kid a pawn.
Yeah.
In between. I think that's the thing that really tore me apart, that different times I was sent to one house or another was not really for my benefit. It was, you know, out of some kind of emotional back and forth between my parents. And so you just feel kind of like an object. You feel like a conduit for other people's anger. And it just, that causes a lot of anxiety in children. So I was really anxious for, you know, as a kid, because you kind of have to feel like you are the nexus in between the two fractured pieces of your foundation.
Yeah, I think it can sound really obvious sometimes too when we give these tips, but the problem is when the emotions are so high that mm-hmm. it feels almost impossible not to do these things. Like one thing that happens is my ex-brother-in-law will very clearly turn the kids against my sister, make them scared of her, etc. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, it becomes so difficult not to do the same thing, to tell your side of the story, to say, do you see what your father's doing? You know, and I mean, honestly, like, to his credit, it's hard living with an alcoholic, and that is mm-hmm. scary. And there is a lot of anger and resentment there too. So it's not like he's just pure monster. I'm very biased. But he has his side of the story too. And he has to also hear, like, I mean, they know that he cheated on her, you know? And it's like, it gets so messy when you want your kids to understand why you're splitting up, mm-hmm. why there's this sudden anger towards their father or towards their mother. You know, you have to figure out, like, is my kid distant from me because they're turning into a teenager, or because they're just coping with a divorce, or is it because their other parents said something to them?
So
then you want to do damage control. And so then you're trying to figure out, like, what's going on with your other parent? Like, what's going on at their house? What are they saying to you?
Right.
So it's just,
I'm sure that's awful.
It gets chaotic very quickly.
I can also understand that if you're going through a divorce, like the amount of anger I have and the amount mm-hmm. of like urge to tell everyone or for everyone to see my side and to mm-hmm. see that the person that he's presenting is not the full story kind of thing. Like, I want the truth to be revealed. Right. And to justify my anger and to justify, like, almost to myself, like, that I shouldn't have just been blaming myself the whole time. But if you have, you know, if your kids are the things that you love the most, and yeah, they're watching you go through something difficult, and they're still, like, it's a normal thing for a kid to idealize a parent, right? To mm-hmm. idealize both, like, think their mom and dad are the best things ever, and then you want the truth to be revealed, right? So it's like, no, but your dad is actually like this, or your mom is actually doing this, and I'm the good parent, right? It's mm-hmm. There is this, like, selfish, like, wanting your side to be justified and wanting the enemy to be seen as the enemy. But that is so confusing. I had a lot of that growing up. My mom would tell me every detail about every fight and all the things that she felt about my dad. And I could see why. I was, like, her main confidant. Mm-hmm. But I grew up, like, half admiring and loving my dad, knowing he was a good dad, and half, like, seeing him as this awful husband. Mm-hmm. And I had to kind of live with that as, like, a 13-year-old girl trying to date, like, for the first time. I mean,
did your father do that to her too? Talk about how terrible she
was. Not as much, no. Mm-hmm. And I think it was, you know, he got remarried and he was mm-hmm. a little bit more in a stable situation. And I think, like, it was kind of clear that he was, like, you know, doing better, I guess. And he was more, I think what he did a little bit more was when I would have fights with my mom, he would, like, commiserate and be like, I know that she's like that. Mm-hmm. I saw that as something that saved me, because he would say, like, I know what she's like, you're not crazy. So he did that a little bit less than she did. But
did that wind up with you admiring him more or less because you knew all the bad things about him? But
yeah, it's I always keep in mind what I learned about in trauma, where mm-hmm. if a kid goes through an abusive household, they will often try to identify with the winner, the stronger one, which is very scary for kids growing up, because they, you know, they've seen, like, maybe an abusive parent be horrible, but they identify or take on some of the qualities of that thing because that was the powerful one in the household.
Such an amazing insight.
Isn't that strange? It's really conflictual for kids, you know, victims of domestic violence or trauma or anything, because they grow up hating their abusive parent, but also taking on some of the same qualities, especially when they start to have kids or have a family. So I identify with my dad a lot because he passed away from cancer, but we have a similar personality, similar drive, similar tendencies. And so I identified with him a lot. And probably on some level, like wanting to be around him because he was like the one who wasn't as broken from the divorce my mom was. But as an adult, I could see both sides. I could kind of have a little bit more of a balance. He wasn't an abusive, like, I think that, let me be clear, he wasn't an abusive father, but he looked like the stronger one because he got remarried and was more stable.
So let's maybe talk about some tips. Starting with, since we've been talking about kids, we've mentioned a couple so far. They shouldn't be your main confidant. Don't overshare. It just places a burden on them that they're not going to be able to cope with, especially when they're young. This triangulation thing, this is basically using the kid as a pawn, using them as a way to communicate with the other partner so that you don't have to be sending messages between them or through them, rather. Asking them to spy on the other parent, asking them for information about the parent, trying to get the kid to side with them over the other parent, all places a burden on the kid. And you can see how quickly everything will unravel once you start doing this. As soon as you try to get the kid to side with you, the other parent is then going to respond by doing the same thing, or very likely that they will. So as soon as you start doing something, the other parent probably will too, because then they feel themselves losing control of the dynamic, and so they have to play dirty too. Other great tips are basically to keep the kid's living situation as normal and routine as possible. So I would say maybe for a house where there's clear abuse, it can make sense to leave that house, go to a new house. But for like a normal functioning family, perhaps like one parent staying in that same house, or the kids have a sense of normalcy and continuation, eating the same meals, having the same routines, agreeing with your ex-partner, we're going to keep a lot of consistency in how we raise our kids. Maybe we'll stick with similar rules. That all just, makes the kid feel like not everything has changed. And just being really clear that the divorce is not the child's fault. Because I think it can quickly feel, especially if they're like become a pawn, a lot of times the parents are going to be fighting over childcare. And so that's when you hear that over and over and over again, like, oh my gosh, my parents are fighting about how to take care of me, which rules to abide by. It can start feeling like you are the central player in this divorce and the cause of the divorce. And so, you got to keep that to a minimum. And then just for the people themselves who are going through divorce, parents or not parents, looking to the future and not exclusively focusing on the past. So Kibby, when we were talking about this earlier, made a good point that like friends can really help in this way, clearing out clothes, pictures, trinkets, what have you, that are going to pull you to the past. That can be really helpful, especially because if you're the person going through the divorce, it can be really, really, really sad to just do that alone. You might resist doing it. So if you're a friend, you can help.
Yeah, friends and family can have a real, first of all, be as like sympathetic as you can be, that when someone's going through a divorce, their minds really latch on. Like it's a really consuming process. I didn't really realize that would be the case, but it can be really consuming, and having, friends like you and people having patience for the times where I'm like, need to vent, knowing it won't be forever, knowing that at some point I need to move on, right? But knowing that I'm going to have to want to talk about it a lot and have my side seen by somebody else. But having patience for how much the person going through a divorce is going to talk about it. But also helping that person build their life afterwards, whether it's, you know, removing the memorabilia, the pictures and the wedding photos from the house, or rearranging the house. Like, something that's really difficult is being in, like, living in a marital home even after, right? There's like elements that are associated with all these memories, and even just friends and family can help redecorate, rearrange things, like create a new life, like help them engage in friends and activities that, you know, I haven't done in a while, or we haven't done in a while in the marriage, and kind of reconnecting with like a new life.
Yeah.
Be helpful.
Yeah. I do. I mean, this has been a fairly depressing episode, but the result of at least the two divorces we've talked about is just so, as much greater happiness. I mean, I know you're still going through it, but there's a lot of excitement about the future, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've learned a lot. I mean, I think that when I look back, I wonder, like, would I do it again? And right now I would say, no, I regret getting married. But we talked about how important it is to, you know, find the opportunity for growth or learning in any kind of trauma or tragedy or loss. I've learned a lot. I've learned about what it actually does look like when you don't value yourself enough. I have a lot of self-confidence, but I would set my expectations, my hopes, the things that I need. And if the person doesn't, you know, agree to that or adhere to it, but stays in the relationship with you, I wasn't showing myself enough value by kind of accepting that. Like, I wasn't really sticking to the things that I asked for. I constantly backed down, constantly compromised. And of course, compromise is a big part of marriage, but I started to really let them go completely to the point where I felt resentment. And I learned in my future relationships not to do that, to like value what I value, state clearly what I need from a relationship. If the person is okay with that, then we can date. If not, that's okay, you know? But to not compromise on those things.
I read a quote today, something like, trauma didn't make me stronger. Trauma made me traumatized. But through picking myself up, moving forward, learning, I made myself stronger. And it feels like this here. Like, of course, you don't have to look back at this divorce being like, thank God that happened. You know, that was so necessary. But there is a kind of self-efficacy, and like, you've learned a lot, and And getting out is an accomplishment. I mean, telling yourself, I know I really want this rosy future, but I don't actually see it. And I'm actually going to put in the work and do what's painful in order to eventually find that for myself is an accomplishment.
Yeah. Thank you.
My sister's sober now, you know, after her divorce, like instantly a lot of that drinking cleared up, and she's like on the apps and dating, and I don't know. It's just like, definitely the future is brighter than it once was. But it's like, right when you're going through that breakup or that divorce, it can feel so, so terrifying to be single again and to be on your own. And it's been great seeing you and her and others, you know, be so afraid of that and convince yourself that everything's going to be terrible. And then it's like the clouds part and suddenly...
Absolutely. If you're in an unhappy marriage, and it's wearing away at your self-esteem, the way you want to live your life, losing self-respect. I mean, I say, the anticipation of the divorce was worse than, I mean, it's still bad, but there is hope. There is a future, you know, after divorce. So don't stay in a marriage just because you're afraid.
And a final note on kids. I think a lot of parents are really terrified that a divorce is going to wreck their kids. And there's research showing that, you know, if you look at, okay, kids, their parents divorce, yes, there are ramifications later in life, but there's more nuanced research showing that actually, even if those parents don't divorce, the signs that there will be ramifications, the depression, the anxiety, those are actually present before the divorce occurs. They're actually a result of the negative relationship and dynamics within the relationship rather than the split up. So it's not necessarily better to stay for the kids. It's the dynamic that creates those problems. So on that note, Kibby, thank you for, you know, sharing your story.
I know it couldn't have been. I'll put a caveat that that was my side. Anyone listening would disagree. Like, there is, of course, I'm sure I did a lot of things wrong. So I don't want to just say that this is like the ultimate story of it. It's just my side. And this is how I felt about it. So I'll own that.
Yeah, of course. Okay, guys. Thank you for joining us in our couples series. And we'll be back with some mental health content next week. See you soon. By accessing this podcast, I acknowledge that the hosts of this podcast make no warranty, guarantee, or representation as to the accuracy or sufficiency of the information featured in this podcast. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk. This podcast and any and all content or services available on or through this podcast are provided for general, non-commercial informational purposes only and do not constitute the practice of medical or any other professional judgment, advice, diagnosis, or treatment and should not be considered or used as a substitute for the independent professional judgment, advice, diagnosis, or treatment of a duly licensed and qualified healthcare provider. In case of a medical emergency, you should immediately call 911. The hosts do not endorse, approve, recommend, or certify any information, product, process, service, or organization presented or mentioned in this podcast, and information from this podcast should not be referenced in any way to imply such approval or endorsement.